Time Travel, Physicist's Playground. Perhaps the person who has distinguished himself the most on the dense mathematical equations of black holes and time machines is cosmologist Stephen Hawking. Unlike other students of relativity, who often distinguish themselves in mathematical physics at an early age, Hawking was actually not an outstanding student as a youth. He was obviously extremely bright, but his teachers would often notice that he was not focused on his studies and never lived up to his full potential. But a turning point came in 1962, after he graduated from Oxford, when he first began to notice the symptoms of ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or Lou Gehrig's disease. He was rocked by the news that he was suffering from this incurable motor neuron disease that would rob him of all motor functions and likely soon kill him. At first, the news was extremely upsetting. What would be the use of getting a PhD if he was going to die soon anyway? But once he got over the initial shock, he became focused for the first time in his life. Realizing that he did not have long to live, he began to ferociously tackle some of the most difficult problems in general relativity. In the early 1970s, he published a landmark series of papers showing that singularities in Einstein's theory, where the gravitational field becomes infinite, like at the center of black holes and at the instant of the Big Bang, were an essential feature of relativity and could not be easily dismissed, as Einstein thought. In 1974, Hawking also proved that black holes are not entirely black, but gradually emit radiation, now known as Hawking radiation, because radiation can tunnel through the gravity field of even a black hole. This paper was the first major application of the quantum theory to relativity theory, and it represents his best-known work. As predicted, ALS slowly led to paralysis of his hands, legs, and even his vocal cords, but at a much slower rate than the doctors had originally predicted. As a result, he has passed many of the usual milestones of normal people, fathering three children, he is now a grandfather, divorcing his first wife in 1991, 4 years later marrying the wife of the man who created his voice synthesizer, and filing for divorce from his second wife in 2006. In 2007, he made headlines when he went aboard a jet airplane that sent him into weightlessness, fulfilling a lifelong wish of his. His next goal is to blast off into outer space. Today, he is almost totally paralyzed in his wheelchair, communicating to the outside world via movements of his eyes. Yet even with this crushing disability, he still cracks jokes, writes papers, gives lectures, and engages in controversy. He is more productive moving his two eyes than are teams of scientists who have full control over their bodies. His colleague at Cambridge University, Sir Martin Rees, who was appointed Astronomer Royal by the Queen, once confided to me that Hawking's disability does prevent him from doing the tedious calculations necessary to keep at the top of his game. So instead, he concentrates on generating new and fresh ideas rather than cranking out difficult calculations, which can be done by his students. In 1990, Hawking read papers of his colleagues proposing their version of a time machine, and he was immediately skeptical. His intuition told him that time travel was not possible because there are no tourists from the future. If time travel were as common as taking a Sunday picnic in the park, then time travelers from the future should be pestering us with their cameras, asking us to pose for their picture albums. Hawking also raised a challenge to the world of physics. There ought to be a law, he proclaimed, making time travel impossible. He proposed a chronology protection conjecture to ban time travel from the laws of physics in order to make history safe for historians. The embarrassing thing, however, was that no matter how hard physicists tried, they could not find a law to prevent time travel. Apparently, time travel seems to be consistent with the known laws of physics. Unable to find any physical law that makes time travel impossible, Hawking recently changed his mind. He made headlines in the London papers when he said, "Time travel may be possible, but it is not practical." Once considered to be fringe science, time travel has suddenly become a playground for theoretical physicists. Physicist Kip Thorne of Caltech writes, "Time travel was once solely the province of science fiction writers. Serious scientists avoided it like the plague, even when writing fiction under pseudonyms or reading it in privacy. How times have changed. One now finds scholarly analyses of time travel in serious scientific journals, written by eminent theoretical physicists. Why the change? Because we physicists have realized that the nature of time is too important an issue to be left solely in the hands of science fiction writers." The reason for all this confusion and excitement is that Einstein's equations allow for many kinds of time machines. Whether they will survive the challenges from the quantum theory, however, is still in doubt. In Einstein's theory, in fact, we often encounter something called closed time-like curves, which is the technical term for paths that allow for time travel into the past. If we followed the path of a closed time-like curve, we would set out on a journey and return before we left. The first time machine involves a wormhole. There are many solutions of Einstein's equations that connect two distant points in space. But since space and time are intimately intertwined in Einstein's theory, this same wormhole can also connect two points in time. By falling down the wormhole, you could journey, at least mathematically, into the past. Conceivably, you could then journey to the original starting point and meet yourself before you left. But as we mentioned in the previous chapter, passing through the wormhole at the center of a black hole is a one-way trip. As physicist Richard Gott has said, "I don't think there's any question that a person could travel back in time while in a black hole. The question is whether he could ever emerge to brag about it." Another time machine involves a spinning universe. In 1949, mathematician Kurt Gödel found the first solution of Einstein's equations involving time travel. If the universe spins, then, if you travel around the universe fast enough, you might find yourself in the past and arrive before you left. A trip around the universe is therefore also a trip into the past. When astronomers would visit the Institute for Advanced Study, Gödel would often ask them if they ever found evidence that the universe was spinning. He was disappointed when they told him that there was clearly evidence that the universe expanded, but the net spin of the universe was probably zero. Otherwise, time travel might be commonplace, and history as we know it would collapse. Third, if you walk around an infinitely long rotating cylinder, you also might arrive before you left. This solution was found by W.J. von Stockham in 1936, before Gödel's time-traveling solution, but von Stockham was apparently unaware that his solution allowed for time travel. In this case, if you danced around a spinning maypole on May Day, you might find yourself in the month of April. The problem with this design, however, is that the cylinder must be infinite in length and spin so fast that most materials would fly apart. The most recent example of time travel was found by Richard Gott of Princeton in 1991. His solution was based on finding gigantic cosmic strings, which may be leftovers from the original Big Bang. He assumed that two large cosmic strings were about to collide. If you quickly traveled around these colliding cosmic strings, you would travel back in time. The advantage of this type of time machine is that you would not need infinite spinning cylinders, spinning universes, or black holes. The problem with this design, however, is that you must first find huge cosmic strings floating in space, and then make them collide in a precise fashion. And the possibility of going back in time would last only a brief period. Gott says, "A collapsing loop of string large enough to allow you to circle it once and go back in time a year would have to have more than half the mass energy of an entire galaxy." But the most promising design for a time machine is the transversible wormhole, mentioned in the last chapter, a hole in space-time in which a person could freely walk back and forth in time. On paper, transversible wormholes can provide not only faster-than-light travel, but also travel in time. The key to transversible wormholes is negative energy. A transversible wormhole time machine would consist of two chambers. Each chamber would consist of two concentric spheres, which would be separated by a tiny distance. By imploding the outer sphere, the two spheres would create a Casimir effect, and hence negative energy. Assume that a Type 3 civilization is able to string a wormhole between these two chambers, possibly extracting one from the space-time foam. Next, take the first chamber and send it into space at near light-speed velocities. Time slows down in that chamber, so the two clocks are no longer in synchronization. Time beats at different rates inside the two chambers, which are connected by a wormhole. If you are in the second chamber, you can instantly pass through the wormhole to the first chamber, which exists at an earlier time. Thus, you've gone backward in time. There are formidable problems facing this design. The wormhole may be quite tiny, much smaller than an atom, and the plates may have to be squeezed down to Planck-length distances to create enough negative energy. Lastly, you would be able to go back in time only to the point when the time machines were built. Before then, time in the two chambers would be beating at the same rate.